It's 5:06, and you're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell, filling in today for Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll take a look at a new study that looks at gender preference in the workplace, whether men like to work with men, women with women, or they like to mix it up.
First, the biggest issue in this fall's gubernatorial race in Wisconsin is jobs. Challenger Mary Burke served as the state's Commerce Secretary under former Democratic Governor Jim Doyle. When he took office, incumbent Scott Walker partially privatized the department. Now the question is whether that department is living up to the governor's promises. Patty Murray reports.
Jobs and the economy came up right away at a forum Mary Burke held in Green Bay last month. She told a packed room it's a topic she hears a lot about on the road.
One woman I talked to in Monroe, I met her in a diner in Monroe, and she told me about her daughter, hardworking student, had graduated from UW-Madison 9 months previously. She hadn't found a job yet. And so those are the worries that a lot of people have. Will our young people stay in our communities? Will we have the opportunities to make sure that they stay in our state?
Burke served as Commerce Secretary from 2005 to 2007. That department has now been transformed by Governor Scott Walker into the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, or WEDIC. It's a public-private organization that's been criticized by some, including Burke, for not being effective. On the campaign trail, Burke partly blames WEDIC for putting Wisconsin dead last in terms of Midwest job creation.
I'm very concerned about what we've seen in terms of the type of grants that are being made without any accountability to increasing jobs, the turnover and leadership there. There's been 8 different changes of people in major positions. That is a sign. I know in the business world, that's a sign that there is further dysfunction going on there.
The dead last claim is true, according to Ken Mayer, a political scientist at UW-Madison. But he adds Walker's claims of job growth are also true, even if he hasn't met his 250,000 new jobs promise. Mayer says it depends on what measures the candidates use.
That's part of the great fudge factor in politics.
In the middle of the debate is WEDIC, but Mayer says there's a limit to what one agency can do.
If you're a Democrat, you look at WEDIC and you say that the administration has been incompetent and that they have not done a good job in handling and allegations of pay-to-play. And if you are a Republican, you look at that as just the nature of politics and doing the best you can and actually successes that you probably feel are not being adequately reflected in media coverage.
In September, Governor Scott Walker was in downtown Green Bay to cut a ribbon at the new $85 million corporate headquarters of Schreiber Foods. Walker says WEDIC helped the deal go through, but the company has to create 160 jobs.
They can earn job credits for each of those as they acquire them, so it's performance-based. And if they do, they'll get up to $4.5 million of jobs credits to help with this project and with their expansion.
Just as Burke expressed concerns about young workers staying in Wisconsin, Walker says businesses like Schreiber need incentives to stay.
There's about 1,000 of their team members in Missouri, about 700 in Utah, and so it's not implausible that they could have looked elsewhere. I think first and foremost, they looked at over 1,000 employees here between Green Bay, Richland Center, and West Bend. But they've also got to look at the bottom line. And so the fact that we made a good case to be in Wisconsin, I think, sends a strong message.
The performance of WEDIC itself is unlikely to sway the election, but the overall issue of job numbers and wages may well be a deciding factor. Patty Murray, Wisconsin Public Radio.
We take a look now at some interesting news regarding gender in the workplace. A new study that looked at workplace diversity found that employees are happier when they work with people of the same gender.
But on the flip side, that same study found that single-sex workplaces aren't nearly as productive as those where men and women work side by side. So how can those two findings go hand in hand, and what's the takeaway here for employees and employers?
Joining us now to discuss these findings is Joan Williams, a professor of law and the director of the Center for Work-Life Law at the University of California, Hastings. She is the author of What Works for Women at Work, Four Patterns Working Women Need to Know. Joan, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
Well, and thanks for coming on such short notice. I want to talk a little bit about this study. As I understand the way this study worked out, there was a company, and they've got a whole bunch of divisions and bureaus and things all over the place, and they've got some places that have all men working at them, some that have all women working at them, and has some that have mixed men and women working in them. And at the end of it all, the main finding is that men like working with men, women like working with women. What are your initial thoughts, your initial reaction to that?
Well, I would actually state the main finding a little bit differently, and that the, what this study found is what other studies have also found, which is when you have a very homogeneous work group, they tend to report that they get along well and they don't have a lot of conflict, but they don't do as good work. When you have a diverse work group, they report higher levels of conflict, but they actually do better work. That's what prior studies have found, and that's what this study also found.
And that is that's interesting because, you know, you would think or you could hypothesize that when everybody is getting along and everybody's on the same page, that it would lead to, you know, everybody getting along and being on the same page and being more productive. But you're saying here that a little bit of conflict, having some diversity in the workplace can actually be a good thing and be more creative and more productive.
I think the upside of a diverse workplace is that people have to explain why they think something is better. That there are a whole series of unexamined assumptions that we all bring around in our everyday baggage. And some of those background assumptions are probably true, and others are probably not. But if we're in with exactly the same kind of people, we're all carrying the same backpack. Whereas if we are in a more diverse situation, we're not carrying the same backpack. And so some of those very basic assumptions are on the table for discussion. Now, that may feel less comfortable, but it also is a more evidence-based approach to achieving a good result. And you know what? Evidence works better. Evidence works better than assumptions.
One of the other findings from this study, and I'm wondering if it's been studied before too, is that some employees anyway really endorse and support the idea of workplace diversity. But then when it happens to them, when their workplace becomes diverse, they're not necessarily as enthusiastic about it. Is that something that's been studied, and have similar findings been found before?
Well, I mean, I think we found it in an odd way again and again, in that what this usually comes out in what's called the permafrost at the level of middle-level management, where often high levels, the high management is very, very committed to diversity, but of course there's not much diversity at the high level of management. In most companies, the highest level up is composed overwhelmingly of white men married to homemakers. So it's kind of easy for them to endorse diversity because they don't have to deal that much with it. I think if you have to deal with diversity day in, day out, it's often challenging. I mean, one of the things that might be happening, the book that I just wrote with my daughter, What Works for Women at Work, for that 127 women were interviewed, and we just recited the findings of experimental studies on gender bias that had been found in social psychology labs, and asked these working women whether they had met with these kinds of patterns of bias. 93% said yes. They had met one or more of the four basic patterns of gender bias. Well, that's not fun. And if you're in a workplace that is composed only of women, that may be more likely to happen. On the other hand, if a workplace is composed only of women or only of men, only of whites, or only of anything, you're not going to have a diversity of experience that's brought to the various problems that the business faces. And even more important, you're not going to develop a culture of every person on the team explaining their assumptions, defending their assumptions, being thoughtful about their assumptions. And it's exactly that process that creates for quality decision making.
We're talking with Joan Williams about gender preference in the workplace. A new study finds that workers tend to be happier working with members of the same gender, but employers with greater gender diversity tend to be more successful. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. We're talking with Joan Williams about gender diversity in the workplace and the results of a new study which finds that workers tend to be happier when they're working with members of the same gender, but employers with greater gender diversity tend to be more successful. You can join the discussion with your questions, your comments at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Joan, we've got some callers lined up, but before we go to that, we've been focusing on sort of gender here, but what about other types of diversity, ethnicity, age, for example? Are findings in similar studies similar to that, that people tend to like working with the same age or the same ethnicity, but a diversity there also provides for greater productivity?
I'm more familiar with the work on racial diversity. Racial diversity studies have found similar findings that the comfort level is not as great when you have a diverse environment, diverse by race, but that the quality of the decision making is improved. So same finding as we find for gender. This same study that we're talking about looked not only at gender diversity, it looked at what it called tenure diversity, what it was a particular workplace mixed in terms of people having been there a long time or a short time. And it found that in environments that lacked tenure diversity, presumably people had been there a long time, that comfort levels were higher, but the performance was poorer. So, in other words, it's the same in-group phenomenon that we were talking about before, where if everyone's experience is all the same, you're likely to have groupthink that's comfortable, but doesn't yield the best business results.
Interesting. Let's go to calls right now. If you'd like to join in, by the way, 800-642-1234. We begin with Gail, who joins us from Door County. Hi, Gail.
Well, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I kind of agree with your guest with a lot of that research, having come from the corporate world for 17 more years in that. I'm finding about everything she's been discussing. And how it would even affect people's job performance reviews and whether or not they were going to have longevity in the company or, you know, so it affects a lot. But I think separating everyone would not really help educate anyone to grow beyond those limitations and those immaturities and those biases that a tribal mentality tends to have, because you have people, their tribal mentality, and they're going to try to find those tribes however they can and divide their new tribe in all these different definitions. And I've also been involved in out of the corporate world, or even in the corporate world, when it's just been, just all women. And they tend to start to do the same thing. They'll start little pools of pockets, and there'll be some that gets ostracized from the group. And there's that challenge for the top rung, and we see that everywhere. And I've just noticed this. So how do you get away from this other than educating these people to kind of get out of that natural instinctive tendency for survival by conquering and separating and then treating someone else differently than they would want to be treated? I think that happens everywhere.
Gail, thanks so much for the call. And I'm wondering, Joan, you know, as an employer, if there's somebody out there who's listening to this, what should they make of this as they look at their workforce, as they look at the people who work for them or work with them?
I think that they should hire a diverse workforce and also take very active measures to address subtle gender and racial bias. And there are many programs around, many trainings around that would help that. What the because a lot of the conflict that arises, for example, when men and women work together or when people of different races work together, stems from these subtle patterns of bias that many people in the dominant group aren't even aware of. The studies show that the most effective way to eliminate bias is to appoint a committee and a specific individual whose job it is to address bias and make sure that the company makes progress on it. This doesn't have to be the person's whole job, but it has to be part of someone's job. And that if you do make it part of someone's job, you can make real strides. So I think one of the things that we don't know is if we were to eliminate the kinds of subtle gender and racial bias that remain very, very pervasive, would the comfort level go up of men working with women and vice versa, people of color working with whites and vice versa? But in the What Works for Women at Work book that I mentioned before, what we found is that, unfortunately, the subtle patterns of bias are extremely pervasive, and they're extremely draining for people. And I think if an employer hired a diverse workforce and took active steps to eliminate this bias, then I think you might get the best of both worlds, namely a workforce where people shared a high comfort level but also yielded very good business results.
Let's take another quick phone call. Wes is with us from Janesville. Hi, Wes.
Hello. It's been my experience. I'm in engineering, and I've actually worked for a number of different employers of different types that had different reasonings on diversity and things. And it seems to me that in the problem-solving world, it's much more important to have people that are diverse in what they've experienced in terms of their field or other industries or whatever, and much less so on whether they're male, female, or race or whatever, because, you know, when you're trying to solve an engineering problem, to me, it's much more important to, you know, have somebody that's experienced with cold weather implementations versus warm weather implementations and so on. And it seems like when you push off this diversity thing that we all just have to have diversity and so on, that's going to make a better workplace, it's a little hard for people to swallow when in practice you don't find that, race or gender really has that much difference.
Wes, thanks for the call. And Joan, that's also a challenge. We've just got a few seconds left, but it sounds like what I hear you saying is that to get true diversity, there has to be a real intentional focus on it.
Well, I think what Wes is, first of all, in engineering, which is a field that has an extremely low percentage of women, but his perception is confirming what all the studies say, which is that if you have a diverse group of people, they bring a diverse group of experiences, and he's focusing on the very technical side, where I'm sure it's true on the technical side. It also turns out to be true on the people side. And that may be hard to see in some engineering environments where there are so extraordinarily few women and people of color. But the studies show it very robustly. The evidence is there.
Joan, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.
Joan Williams is a professor of law and director of the Center for Work-Life Law at the University of California, Hastings. She is the author of What Works for Women at Work: Four Patterns Working Women Need to Know.